This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila. Tonight, are students from vernacular schools at a disadvantage in the job market? This is the argument being made in a court case. So first, we look at the details of the case to see where this is coming from. Then, what does the job market actually tell us? And finally, are there advantages to vernacular languages being the medium of instruction? We'd like to hear from you. Are students from vernacular schools at a disadvantage when looking for jobs? What has your experience been? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:09, and the beginning of today's story, as it were, actually goes back to December 2019, when a particular group of people took legal action on the current usage of Chinese and Tamil as the mediums of instruction in vernacular schools. So the groups in question are Gabungan Pelajar Melayu Semenanjung, or GPMS, Majlis Pembangunan Pendidikan Islam Malaysia, or MAPIM, and the Coalition of National Writers Associations, or GAPENA. And the lawsuit was initially against the Education Ministry and the Malaysian government as the two defendants. However, that case has now grown to include 11 additional defendants. So now the defendants named include MCA, MIC, Gerakan, Putra, the Malaysian Chinese Language Council, Chinese Vernacular School Educationist Groups, Zhongshang and Jiaozong, as well as representatives of retired vernacular school teachers and former vernacular school students. So that is really a large number of defendants, all related to the vernacular school system. Now, the lawsuit basically seeks a declaration that the existence of Chinese and Tamil vernacular schools goes against Article 152, subsection 1 of the Federal Constitution, where Bahasa Malaysia is defined as the national language. More specifically, it seeks a declaration that sections 2, 17, and 28 of the Education Act of 1996, which allows vernacular schools to conduct lessons in their native languages, that this Education Act goes against that article. Where that brings us to is, of course, the hearing, or the latest development of that case. The hearing happened yesterday, and what we saw happen was that In the KL High Court, lawyer Mohammad Hanif Khatri Abdullah, who's acting for GPMS, MAPIN and GAPENA, claimed that limited mastery of the national language, Bahasa Malaysia, would deny vernacular school students the right to live with dignity as per Article 5 of the Federal Constitution, specifically because it would limit their job opportunities in both the private and public sector. He also said that it would hinder their higher education studies due to prejudice. Dato' Sri Gopal Sriram, however, who's the lawyer for the Malaysian Chinese Language Council, argued that the court should dismiss this claim as the three plaintiffs essentially failed to show specifics on what loss they suffered due to this current government policy on vernacular schools. Dato' Sri Gopal Sriram also said that the issue should be determined by Parliament rather than be brought to court as a legal challenge, because this issue of vernacular schools is a legislative policy. So that hearing resumes today, but we would like to unpack the issues that are brought up by this case, and in a larger sense, take a look at the vernacular school system specifically within the context of the job market, because this question of language is an interesting one, right? Politically speaking, of course, vernacular schools often attract a fair amount of support as well as criticism. But when it comes to practical applications, when it comes to putting out students who are then able to go out and function, I think this question of whether they are being set up prepared to enter the job market is an interesting one. And so that's what we're going to try and unpack today. First, however, we will unpack the case itself and see where we are on that. We'd like to hear from you. Are students from vernacular schools at a disadvantage when looking for jobs? What are your experiences? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be joined by constitutional lawyer Niu Sin Yu. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:16. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. And today we're looking at the issue of vernacular schools and whether they place students at a disadvantage when it comes to entering the job market. This is coming on the wake of a lawsuit that, essentially claims that very fact. And we'd like to hear from you. Are students from vernacular schools at a disadvantage when looking for jobs? What have your experiences been on this? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, first, to help us unpack the court case itself, we are joined by constitutional lawyer Niu Sin Yu. Sin Yu, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So this lawsuit against the usage of Chinese and Tamil as mediums of instruction has been filed in 2019. Could you bring us up to speed on where we're at?
So, Sharmila, like you mentioned earlier, that the plaintiff had filed a suit against the Ministry of Education and the Malaysian government, and they have sought for a number of reliefs. I'll just briefly go through the reliefs. These reliefs are a court declaration that Sections 217 and 28 of the Education Act, which allows for the establishment of vernacular schools, is inconsistent with Article 152 of the Federal Constitution and is therefore void and of no effect. The second declaration is that a declaration that the vernacular schools are inconsistent with Articles 5, 8, 10, 11, and 12 of the Federal Constitution. These relate to fundamental liberties. And lastly, an order that the Ministry of Education and the Government of Malaysia to bring all vernacular schools in line with Article 152. Now, where we are is that the Minister of Education and the Malaysian government, they have filed an application to determine these questions. And if these questions are determined, it would result in the full disposal of the suit. Now, I'm not going to go through all these questions for the purposes of today, but the High Court, Kuala Lumpur High Court, is currently hearing this application by the Ministry of Education and the Malaysian government. And during the course of the hearing, whether or not Article 152 makes or renders Sections 217 and 28 of the Education Act void and of no effect, that question had arisen, and it's a lot to unpack when it comes to the interpretation of Article 152 as well as that of the Education Act.
So specifically, the suit seeks a declaration that vernacular schools go against that Article 152, and that pertains to defining BM as the national language, right? Talk to us about this definition and what it covers and how it comes into play in this case.
Okay, the starting point is the interpretation of Article 152, and Article 152 relates to the national language. And it simply says that the national language shall be the Malay language, and shall be in such script as Parliament may by law provide. There's two important exceptions to this. And the first is that no person shall be prohibited or prevented from using, otherwise than for official purposes, or from teaching or learning any other language. That's the first exception. The second exception is nothing in this clause shall prejudice the right of the federal government or of any state government to preserve and sustain the use and study of the language of any other community in the Federation. Now, I mentioned earlier that the first exception, it mentions otherwise than for official purpose. Official purpose is defined as, under the Federal Constitution, as any purpose of the government, whether federal or state, and includes any purpose of a public authority. And public authority is also defined in the Federal Constitution, and it includes a statutory authority exercising powers vested in it by federal or state law. Now, the central question to me, my view is that you know, you have to see whether a nation-type school or a vernacular school is a statutory authority. If it is a statutory authority, then they would have to they would fall under the definition of Article 152. Now we let's go through the Education Act. Section 2 defines national type school as using the Chinese or Tamil language as the main medium of instruction. And Section 17, the other impugned provision, it mentions that the national language shall be the main medium of instruction in all educational institutions, except a national type school, which is a vernacular school. Finally, Section 28, it deals with the establishment and maintenance of national and national type schools. And it says that subject to provision of the Education Act, the minister may establish national schools and national type schools and shall maintain such schools. Now, a school to me is not a statutory authority as defined under the federal constitution. And therefore, based on Article 152, 1A, which is the exception that I've mentioned earlier, such schools are therefore not prohibited from using, teaching, or learning any other language, Chinese or Tamil. And for that reason, this challenge to me, it would fail because it quite clearly falls under the definition of or the exception to Article 152, that is that no person shall be prohibited from using any other language, as well as it falls within the right of the federal government to preserve and maintain and sustain the use of any other language for any other community in this federation. So that's just a brief take on what the provisions of the law says.
So I wanted to draw, to get you to explain the fact that the group initially filed action against the Education Ministry and the government, but now that list of defendants has grown. What is the significance of this?
Well, it simply means that there are a lot of parties or bodies out there that are interested in the outcome of this suit. And for that reason, the court had allowed, I think it was reported that 11 other defendants have been added. So given the vast interests of many other bodies in this matter, it goes to show that this is a case of tremendous importance, because if the plaintiffs succeed, that would effectively mean that vernacular schools are illegal, to put it quite simply.
The other thing the lawyer representing them touched on yesterday in court was that students from vernacular schools may not have as many job opportunities because of a lack of BM proficiency, and that this would then jeopardize their rights under Article 5 to live with dignity. Could you take us through this argument? How would you understand it?
I think for someone to make a statement like that, it needs to be backed by evidence, cogent evidence. For me, that statement is a generalization. It seeks to paint everyone who comes from a vernacular school with a broad brush, which may not entirely be true. I think when you're in a court of law, you need to be very careful, and the court may not even be the right place to decide, you know, whether or not all those who had gone to a vernacular school would be severely disadvantaged, as how the plaintiffs or their lawyers have painted it to be.
Right, and that's something I think Gopal Sriram, the lawyer who was representing the Malaysian Chinese Language Council, drew on and said that the court should dismiss the suit, as the plaintiffs had failed to specify the losses that they suffered from this current policy on vernacular schools. In a case like this, how would that proof of harm even be demonstrated?
Well, I think when Dr. Sri Gopal Sriram said that, because I don't have the papers with me, but I suspect it has to do with the fact that the manner in which this suit was filed. It was filed as a writ. And usually when it is filed as a writ, it means that you have suffered damages and losses and you are seeking compensation. That's normally why somebody files a writ. You know, it's a private law action. But without going so much into the legal details, if it is a requirement of the law that you need to demonstrate that you had suffered damages, you had suffered losses, and you're unable to, the court would be in a position to dismiss your claim because you're not fulfilling one of the legal requirements and as set out in the law. And I think it was upon this basis that Dr. Sri Gopalaswam said that. But you know, we have to look at the papers to be certain.
So I also wanted to draw on something you alluded to earlier. Dato' Sri Gopalaswam also said that this issue should be determined by Parliament rather than the court. What do you make of this? Is there a significance in the fact that it's being brought up in court instead?
Well, I think when I first had a look at the papers, which, or rather the reports, I thought, and having had a look at the law, I thought the plaintiffs, you know, they may have a point because you must use the national language for all official purposes. So the only question is whether or not in a school, when you teach, that is considered to be an official purpose. I think a lot of arguments had been canvassed during the court proceedings to sort of explain the legislative history or the reason behind Article 152, as well as what official purpose means. And I think it would, the record would show that Article 152 was it was made with vernacular schools in mind. And it was not as though as vernacular schools did not exist at that time when our federal constitution was drafted. It was. And the drafters were quite mindful of the fact that there is a need to preserve and protect the heritage of other communities, other minorities. And it was drafted with that intention in mind. The official purpose was later clarified in Parliament by previous governments to not include what is being taught in school. And that it was on that basis that the Education Act was enacted in 1996. And again, there is a... It was drafted with the intention of having vernacular schools in mind. So for the plaintiffs to now come to court and say that, look, it is inconsistent with Article 152, they are blind towards our history, and they are blind towards the background upon which Article 152 is being drafted. So whether or not they should have come to court, I thought, that's their right. You know, the court should be open to everybody. But whether or not the court should make a proper, can make such declarations, I think not. I think if anything, if the plaintiff wants to take this further, because I don't think the court, they would be too successful in court. I hope I'm not prejudging anything. Perhaps this is a battle for them to take up in Parliament, amend the federal constitution.
Sinyu, thanks for speaking with us today. That was constitutional lawyer Niu Sinyu. Do keep sending your thoughts our way. After this, we'll take a look at the job market and see whether vernacular students do face a disadvantage when looking for jobs. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:39. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. And today we're talking about vernacular schools, specifically a lawsuit that claims that students from vernacular schools are at a disadvantage when looking for jobs. The lawsuit has been brought by Gabungan Pelajar Melayu Semenanjung, MAPIM, as well as GAPENA. So we are unpacking that really. And earlier we looked at the legalities. After this, we're going to be discussing the job market itself and where students from vernacular schools stand, but we'd like to hear from you. Are students from vernacular schools at a disadvantage when looking for jobs? What have your experiences been? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we get to our next guest, I think we have time for a couple of messages. Let's see. We have Shanti saying, all my three daughters are from Chinese schools. They're all professionals now. And until today, they thank me for putting me in a Chinese school, as they're always given first priority when it comes to job opportunities because they speak four different languages. And Shanti, I think we're getting a number of people touching on that same point. Vinayan, for example, says, this is absolutely an absurd claim. My two sons are fully Chinese educated. They speak good Bahasa, Mandarin, and English. It's an absolute advantage for jobs. Both found jobs easily and are gainfully employed. We also have Victor, who called earlier and left this message. So Victor says, I'm so touched. The plaintiff is so worried about my prospect that they worry about my native language. I believe that to learn our mother tongue is our hak asasi. They are trying to take it away, and that's a pity. You know, Victor, I think that focus on being given access to learning your mother tongue is actually an important one. And I do think that what this comes down to is a question of choice, right? Vernacular schools can be politically fraught when it comes to discussions of national identity. But I think the question of being given the choice and being given the right to decide is something that a lot of people hold very dear. Do keep those thoughts coming. We'd like to hear from you. Are students from vernacular schools at a disadvantage when looking for jobs? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, to look at this from the perspective of the job market itself, we're now joined by Derek Toh, founder and CEO of Hiredly. Derek, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Shamila. Thanks for having me.
So the argument that's being put forth in court was that vernacular school students would experience limited job opportunities because of a lack of proficiency in BM. Is this an issue in the job market right now?
Yeah, that's a quite interesting question. Well, I think, of course, this would depend on the nature of the company and the job. So, for example, if you're working with government bodies a lot or in the government itself, a lot of work is conducted in BM. Or if your role requires you to interact with the general population, right? And I think most Malaysians speak, Bahasa Malaysia. So, of course, there will be some impact there. But in terms of looking at it from, say, multinational companies, or companies that work with, other companies outside of Malaysia, very often the language that they are looking at is English, because outside of Malaysia, everyone. The general way they communicate is in English. So, I mean, this claim that if you don't speak BM, you're disadvantaged. I can't say that that's not true, but how disadvantaged you are is the main question, right? So, because I think a lot of big multinational companies who are based in the city, for example, a lot of high-level professional jobs would require English as a language that they are looking for.
Is there a difference between the private and public sector?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So I think, if you do work in the government, with the government, they do conduct a lot of work in Bahasa Malaysia. And in fact, a lot of documents are in Bahasa Malaysia. So if you do not speak Bahasa Malaysia, yes, you are definitely, disadvantaged, right? That's 100% for sure. But, in the private sector, like I mentioned, a lot of multinational companies, when they... it depends on the nature of the business, right? So if your business is selling to consumers in the general population, then being able to speak Bahasa Malaysia is very important. But in general, if they are, say, their headquarters is in America or Europe or Australia or Singapore, and they work with other multinational companies, I think that becomes a bit less of an issue, right? And the ability to, again, to be able to speak English becomes a bit more important in a scenario like that.
So we've touched on English and BM. What about other languages? Do companies prioritize language proficiency when they're sourcing for fresh talent?
Yeah, I think there's no big secret that obviously China, for example, is booming, right, as an economy. It's one of the big powerhouses in the world at the moment. And because they're also in Asia, there are increasingly more and more companies and businesses in Malaysia that does business with China, either directly or indirectly. So, you know, there are oftentimes this requirement to kind of have someone speak Mandarin because they have to deal with a Chinese counterpart, for example, or customers in China. So this has become increasingly more, I wouldn't use the word prominent, but I see it a little bit more, right? More and more these days. Primarily that, but apart from this, I still think that the main language that most people look for is English.
So whatever your language gap might be, are there enough opportunities for people to hone their language skills once they've left school?
Yeah, I guess a lot of the learning happens sort of on the job. So it will depend on, you know, the nature of your work. And I actually think that, even for me personally, like I work with the government a lot. I work directly with like job seekers a lot. And I have to sort of speak different languages as and when it's required. This is, I suppose, the main opportunity where you can kind of hone your language skills when you're actually working.
That's actually an interesting point because I was wondering this myself. Like, if you didn't get that amount of exposure, say, to BM in school, how easy is it for an adult to pick it up, sharpen it on the fly as they're working?
Yeah, I think if you are in a situation that requires you to speak BM, you will speak BM. That's what I sort of believe. So like in my example earlier, you know, one of the things I sort of want to highlight is it's okay if you don't speak perfect Bahasa Malaysia or perfect English. Very often when like two parties are meeting and there's certain value you bring to the table, right? Like there's something that they find interesting that we have that interested and there's something that they have that we're interested in. People will work to kind of bridge that barrier, right? As long as, you know, you would try to speak it, you make an effort and you confidently speak it, there is a way to communicate. So there are many different ways that you would learn it, right? On the job.
Do you hear about people in the job market being discriminated against, either because of their language skill or their educational background because they come from vernacular schools?
Yeah, on a personal level, definitely no. In fact, I would say that I have a lot of people who are close to me who actually went to vernacular school and they're doing really well, right? They're doing really well in their career. I know you mentioned Chinese school earlier, you know, for some of the audience, but, you know, I just had lunch with a very senior person yesterday. They went to like Tamil school and they're doing really well in their job. So it's not clear to me that there's any disadvantage going to vernacular school because at the end of the day, they speak different languages, right? They'll speak their mother tongue, they'll speak Bahasa Malaysia, they'll speak English, and people can learn, right?
Would you like to leave us with a final message?
Yeah, so I actually think that, you know, obviously being able to speak English is very important in terms of like in the private sector MNCs. However, having said that, I mean, we, as someone that lives in Malaysia, as a rakyat, the general population, I believe most people speak Bahasa Malaysia more than English. And I'm talking about outside of the city, right? Because I think if you're living in the city, you might feel like most people are actually speaking English. But you really look at the broader Malaysia, most people speak Bahasa Malaysia. And therefore, Bahasa Malaysia is always going to be a very important language to have. But having said that, if you are looking for a job and you find that, you know, like language is a barrier to your concern, like I sort of mentioned earlier, you don't really have to worry too much about speaking perfect English or perfect Bahasa Malaysia, like a professor level kind of language. Very often, I know a lot of people who don't speak great English or great Bahasa Malaysia, but who are great communicators, amazing communicators. It's all about being able to learn how to transfer an idea in a very simple way from you to someone else. And if you can do it in a very simple way with enough confidence, right, that you try, very often that's what the employer cares about the most, right? They want to see that you're putting in effort. It doesn't matter if you don't speak it perfectly. They want to see that you are bringing skills, right, something to the table, right? And ultimately, they're not hiring you to teach BM or English, right? So that's not, unless that is your job. But So don't let the language barriers stop you, right? Go in confidently and just work your best to try to communicate your idea.
Derek, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Charmila, for having me.
That was Derek, though, founder and CEO of Hiredly, weighing in on the job market. After this, we will look at the advantages that one might have if they came from a vernacular school background. But we'd like to hear from you. Are students from vernacular schools at a disadvantage when looking for jobs? Do you have personal experiences to share? You can call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:51. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila, and we're wrapping up our conversation on vernacular schools and a lawsuit that claims that students that come from vernacular schools are at a disadvantage when entering the job market. We'd like to hear from you. Do keep sending your thoughts our way. That number to call, 7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, to look at the advantages that we might have by coming from a vernacular school background, we have joining us S. Pasupathi, Director of the My Skills Foundation. Pasupathi, thank you for being with us today.
Hi, good evening. Thank you.
So, taking us very briefly through history, why did vernacular schools begin to use these languages as their medium of instruction?
I mean, speaking for Tamil school, I think the first Tamil school was established in 1816, for 205 years ago, as part of Penang Preschool. And later, knowing the importance of primary education, the Labour Code Ordinance during the British time required in a West State, there's more than 10 children between the age of 6 to 12, is mandated or required to have to provide facilities for the school. So that's how the Tamil school started. And there'd be a lot of debate about the vernacular schools that have been going on since 100 over years. You know, the Barnes Report, the F. Moore Committee Report, Rasag Report, Raman Talib Report. Eventually, the Raman Talib Report recognized Tamil schools as national type schools, vernacular schools as recognized national type schools. So I think this debate, it is going on for a long, long time, but you must look back at the Article 152, Subsection 1 of the Constitution. It says, although Malay language is the national language, but teaching and learning of any other language is permitted. So I think the legality of vernacular schools is here to stay. I think cannot be decided by the court of law. It's entrenched in the Constitution.
What are your thoughts on this argument that vernacular school students lack proficiency in BM? Is there truth to this?
I don't really agree because in 1974, when Tun Mahathir was the education minister, he converted all the English schools into stage by stage into fully Malay school, so Sekolah Kebangsaan. And since then, hundreds of thousands have graduated from the public universities and private universities in Malaysia. They've gone into private sector, government sector, and they're gainfully employed. So this argument of these students not doing well and all is just baseless. Just for example, myself, I come from Tamil school. I did a 6 years at education in Tamil. Later, that luckily I did from Form 1 to Form 6 in English. Then I went to University of Kebangsaan, Malaysia, where I did 100% in Malaysia, 100% in Malay. Then I went to work in the income tax department, a government department. Later, I went to UK to do law in English, fully in English. I came back. I did my master's in English University of Malaya. So, 6 years of education is not going to hamper your future. So talking about, you know, I don't understand, you know, you just, especially when the student, when from the age of 7 to 12, maybe from the age of 3 to 12, a child can acquire more than 3 languages, easily can acquire 5 languages. So I would promote learning about French, yeah, maybe German, Japanese, to be introduced in this primary school, not abolishing vernacular education at all.
So I wanted to pick up on that, actually, because I wanted to ask you, do you see specific advantages in actually coming from vernacular school backgrounds, particularly when it comes to the job market?
Definitely, because one thing, you see, point on this matter is there are about 60,000 Malay students are in Chinese primary school. Another 10,000 Indian students are in Chinese primary school. That alone shows that studying Chinese or Tamil is not going to hamper that thing. And if you ask me, a child during the primary stage think in mother tongue. No, mother tongue. So let it be Malay, Chinese, or Mandarin, they'll be thinking. So when it comes to content subject, they'll be able to understand the subject better. So when they go to secondary school, they are better prepared than a child coming from a language of not your mother tongue. It has ample evidence done by UNICEF and a lot of foreign studies have done that the best language for a child is in mother tongue.
Now, when it comes to mastering Bahasa Malaysia, right, as a society, of course, different people have different levels of mastering the language, similar to English, really. But because it's our national language, how can we encourage more students to become fluent in BM?
I think, and of course, I mean, Bahasa Malaysia is important. Everybody knows, and it is being used in our court system, in our civil service, everywhere. So if someone says our students are not competent or proficient in English, I think they are wrong. Definitely, they are wrong. In fact, knowing the importance of Bahasa Malaysia and the need for proficiency in English, former Prime Minister Tun Mahathir in year 2003, he introduced a dual language system where he wanted science and maths to be taught in English. So you can see, I think if anybody comes now and say, oh, our students are not proficient in Bahasa Malaysia, I think it's wrong. And they are good in Bahasa Malaysia. I think what is lacking is proficiency in English. To meet the demands of the private sector, I think as much as we are teaching Bahasa Malaysia, we also must teach the students English so that they can compete with foreigners in the job market locally and internationally.
We just have about a minute left, but aside from language, what other factors should come into play when we consider the relevance of vernacular schools?
Vernacular schools are here to stay because more than 50 to 60% of Indian students are in Tamil school, and 95% of the Chinese students are in Mandarin primary schools. So I think there's no need to be the debate on whether we need vernacular school or not should not arise. But we must look at, are we providing quality education? Are we producing quality graduates for the market? I think that I definitely, if anybody want to debate about the need for, debate on vernacular school, I think it's really stupid. I think we got to move on and talk about producing quality graduates who can meet the demands locally and internationally.
Aswati, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Thanks.
That was Espa Supathy, director of the My Skills Foundation, weighing in on this issue of vernacular schools and whether they are producing students that are ready for the job market, specifically in terms of being able to speak Bahasa Malaysia. We'd like to hear from you. Are students from vernacular schools at a disadvantage when looking for jobs? What have your experiences been? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're getting so many messages already. We'll be back after this to look at them. So keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.